Welcome to episode 40 of All of Your Business. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of business owners whose currents raise tides that lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. On this episode, we're talking to Brandy Johnson of Love One. And now your host, Michael Jonas.
Thank you so much for being here, Brandy.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah, and by being here, I mean virtually.
Yes, as all of our interactions seem to be lately.
Tell me about Love One and the work that you're doing.
Well, we started as just primarily free laundry for folks in need, because laundry at a laundromat is very expensive, and often folks experiencing poverty have to choose what they spend their money on. And with laundry being so expensive, there just never seems to be enough to go around. But since COVID, we've expanded to showers and food distribution and really providing more wraparound supports for folks as we build relationships with them. So the mission, the heart of Love One, is to connect with people on an individual basis. That is Love One. It's one person, one family, one community at a time. Really getting to know people and figure out how we can support them in whatever next step they're ready for. And the avenues that we're able to connect to do that work is through laundry in the laundromat, showers, street outreach, camp outreach, and we run a food pantry in a rural area here in Oregon City.
Very cool. First of all, thank you for doing such great community work. It's very important, and it's, as they say, it's doing the work, the actual work. How do people who need your services hear about you, know about you, find, you know, either the food or the shower cart, or know that there's a laundry day going on?
Each one of those service hubs is kind of different. The answer to that is a little bit specific to each of those. Laundry has been going on for 10 years. We just celebrated our 10th birthday last week. So for that event, we serve a pretty high portion of the houseless population in Oregon City, Milwaukee, surrounding areas. And people have memorized when their events are. And they'll go around and collect their friends, make sure everybody makes it to the event. They'll check in, or they'll text me. It's a personal, you know, type invite, sort of, it's a community feel, right? People want to belong, people do belong. And so it's kind of the event of the week when we have those events. We also do a lot of social media and on our website. And for showers, a lot of it is similar to laundry, word of mouth and social media and our website. The food pantry is a lot of the folks actually doing the work there live in that community. And so inviting their friends and neighbors, spreading the word. And we have a pretty good base of followers on social media and partner organizations that will share information and put out flyers and that sort of thing. So we work closely with the schools and like family supports, DHS, 211, the list could go on, but a lot of it is, people help connect others to the resource. And I love hearing those stories, where people hear about us and didn't know it was a thing and help out a neighbor. That's the best part of the work.
Yeah, absolutely. I also know at one point we talked about a clothes closet in a school. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's a PTA clothes closet in Oregon City, and it serves all of Clackamas County families in schools. And they collect a lot of donated items, and they need to wash and dry them so that people can come in and shop for clothes. And they had a washer and dryer that were not working at all and needed a replacement. And so we applied for a small grant from Clackamas County and got to work and were able to provide them with a brand new industrial washer and dryer. And they've been using that. Unfortunately, then COVID hit. And so they shut down services temporarily, but they're back up and running. So they have a washer and dryer. And we did a similar project at our local high school has a significant number of houseless students. And so we put in a washer dryer facility in partnership with the pantry that is run there. That's called the Pioneer Pantry. And that's connected to the homeless McKinney-Vento homeless liaison services. And so students who don't have access to food over the weekend when they go home, or laundry facilities, you know, things like that, the school works to provide those resources, and we wanted to work to support the school and the outreach. And so, you know, laundry's in our wheelhouse, and we like to make sure everybody has access. And so we like to take on projects like that.
And people you serve, the populations, I mean, we're all people, right? No matter who you are, where you're at. But this is a population that potentially the people who are volunteering, they need to have a little bit more cultural competency or social justice lens. So I guess walk me through a little bit of that in terms of who volunteers, and then how do you determine that a volunteer is ready to help this population?
Yeah, those are good points and a good question. I would say we've been very fortunate to have people who, we've only had a few people who have come with different motives. For the most part, people come because they just genuinely want to help, and they come with the space to ask questions and observe and learn. Overall, I see that as a common factor with our volunteers. Absolutely, with just what is the lens that we approach the work with, and how do we help our volunteers with that? We do a little bit of training before an event. We at the time of the event, we do a little group gathering where we talk about why we're there, what we're doing. We make sure that new volunteers are partnered with seasoned volunteers. And a lot of our seasoned volunteers now are folks who were formerly houseless when we met them and were receiving services. And so we've made a big push to include, but also not even just include, let lead folks with that experience lead some of the work that we do, and definitely have that voice. We invite them to the board meetings and to the table and the discussions around logistics and general operating things. And we end up finding that we learn so much, and every single time it brings us back to the heart of what we do, which is the people. It's not the numbers. It's not the opinions. It's literally knowing that we've connected with the people who needed whatever, the clean laundry, with the moral support, with the, we celebrate birthdays. So it's really, for me, it's about creating the culture that, that continues that tone, and making it clear our expectations, our community standards, and how we treat one another. We also are doing a lot of work around diversity, equity, inclusion training. As you know, you helped us develop our policy, our plan for that. And that has us looking a lot at what we do and how we do it. And we're very excited because we've chosen to approach that as a living, breathing document that grows along with us. And so we're already looking to implement some new things as a result of that. We are seeing a more diverse crowd at our events. And so we're always needing to reevaluate how we can best serve everyone who shows up. You know, Clackamas County is not the most diverse county, nor is it the most inclusive. But I would say Love One is at the forefront of leading the efforts among a few other groups to be inclusive and to, you know, expand our services, and not just because it's the thing to do or that's what the grant applications require, but because that's genuinely how you deliver better services and connect with humans.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know we've talked a lot about process and how, you know, being a nonprofit organization, you have the social service component, the on the ground, and then you have to have nonprofit compliance with the Department of Justice and the IRS, and you have to have a board and bylaws and things like that. So whether it's with you or whether it's with other people that I've worked with, there is often this sort of like, can't we just do the thing? Can't we just help people? You know, why do we have to have all these processes? Why do we have to have all these rules? So I guess talk to me a little bit about how becoming more process oriented, even though it may be somewhat of a pain, is helping you or changing your organization.
I'm really glad that we're redoing this podcast because my answer is completely different today than it would have been back when we talked before. I took over as executive director in November of 2019. And even before that, I felt like it was an uphill battle to make sure everything was in compliance, that we had all the things. When I joined the board, we didn't even have liability insurance. And it was kind of a learn as you go, kind of choose your own adventure. But really it was like 4,000 doors that we couldn't choose to not go through them. We just had to go through them one at a time. And I think the biggest push was in the last 6 to 8 months working with you to finalize so many of the things that we had grown, and we needed to make things fit what we were doing. And I'm a very detail-oriented process person. I worked in a law firm for 14 years before doing this full-time. So I understand the importance of crossing T's and dotting I's. But then, as you mentioned, with the social services component, you just want to get out there and connect with people and do the work. But I knew that the other work had to be done first. And I definitely didn't enjoy it all the time. But every time we could cross something off, so I made a list. And every time we could cross something off the list, I was like, okay, we're making progress. To where we had our board meeting last night, and it was just an encouraging, uplifting celebration of where we are and where we've been and where we're headed, as opposed to the slog of the, we got to do this, we got to do that. My team is amazing, and they all carry a substantial load of carry the work with me. And we just finalized our current iteration of the DEI plan. And so right now, like, the things on my to-do list are to review drafts of things that are of applications that are grant writer, because we now have a nonprofit grant writer working with us. And so it's instilling a lot of it. This is a long answer. A lot of it's instilling the right, doing the hard work, making sure we're covered, making sure, you know, doing the insurance reviews, not my favorite day ever, you know, doing all the documents, but then also finding people who are skilled and like to do the work. Right. I don't want to put a round peg in a square hole, or, you know, I want people to do what they care about and are passionate about. And every time I'm like, oh, hey, you choose what you want to do, somebody does. And guess what? I check in with them and I'm like, you're doing a fantastic job. This is great. Right. Like, and that's how we approach our volunteers too.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And if for those who don't know, you mentioned a re-record in 40 episodes. So you're the 40th episode of this podcast. In 40 episodes, we've had two re-records. One was you, because we lost the file. Lucky you. And the other person is a friend of mine who also did the podcast, who wasn't being as honest, not lying, but wasn't giving me his all. Like, put up a block. So we did a podcast, and then I basically said, look, come on, like, we need to do this again, dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
So you're one of those two.
I'm actually glad. I feel like I'm in a totally different headspace, and our organization is in a different space too than the first time. So,
you know, you mentioned working in the law office. I know you've done all kinds of jobs. You're a mother, your wife. Before you became the executive director, you also had a job, or, you know, another paid job. So kind of talk to me and the listeners about balancing life and doing multiple things and phasing in and phasing out. And how do you sort of, I don't know, stay on top of what you need to do and be clear on your goals and get things done?
That's a good question. I am not a motivational speaker, and I tend to avoid those types of books just because then I feel bad, like I'm not doing enough. So I, I would say that doing this work is so deeply what I'm passionate about, mm-hmm. that all of the other, you know, having the full-time job before I could get paid doing this work. And I think focusing on how much I love the work, and it was just, it's sort of like with Leading Love One, it's sort of been like raising a third kid, honestly, like something that was in its infancy stage and I loved it and cared for it and just kept nurturing it. And part of it was the timing of COVID, with the additional funding available and the emphasis on caring for individuals versus systems, less on systems. But you know, I'm not going to lie either and say, oh, it's been a breeze, because it hasn't, you know, working two 40 hour a week jobs was a lot. And it was a lot of strain on my kids, on my marriage, on just me as an individual. So I'm also looking back at it, you know, with a little bit of rose tinted glasses, because I made it past that part. But I think for me, the balance came through the joy of all of the amazing people I've met doing this work. I think when we're well connected to what motivates us, it is, or for me at least, it makes the stressful times, it makes the heavy load bearable. You know, I had moments where I'd cry in my closet, like, I can't do this. And then I'd be like, well, I could stop doing it. And then I thought, no, that's not at all what I want. You know, so giving myself a little grace to have those moments and explore those thoughts. But yeah, it hasn't been easy, but it's definitely been rewarding.
And how long has it been since this is your main full-time job or your only full-time job?
October.
Being a mother is also a full-time job. So
it is, it is. And my kids are just fantastic. They go to events with us. They help when we do outreach, you know, this is what they're accustomed to. The other day it was freezing outside. And there was somebody in our neighborhood on a park bench, and I noticed him there earlier in the day. He was still there that night when we came home from dinner. And so I told the kids I was going to pull the car over and we were going to go check. I was going to go check on this guy. And my husband was running the warming shelter that night in Oregon City. And so I made sure there was room for this guy. And I went and talked to him and I was like, hey, what's your plan for tonight? You know, cause he had laid down on the park bench and I was like, so it's like 27 degrees. This can't be a plan. And so I took him down to the warming shelter and my kids just like shuffled around in the car, continued their Roblox conversation, you know, didn't bat an eye. So I'm not sure if like, this is going to be something that they need to work through in therapy later, or if it's going to be, you know, one of those, oh yeah, our parents were crazy. We, you know, we always had people at our house. Like it's just a thing. That's how we are. I'm not clear on that.
Well, they have parents who are lovely and who are teaching them about humanity and about, you know, seeing people as people, meeting them where they're at. That's what I was going to ask you about your childhood. I mean, did you have parents who did things that were community related, or did, you know, was your mom like a PTA mom? Was there some sort of social environment where you were like, I'm going to be like that? Or I've also heard the opposite. Someone had parents who are not really involved in the community, and then they as a child decide, hey, when I'm older, I want to be involved.
Mm-hmm. For me, it wasn't, I wasn't cognizant of either one of those decisions so much. In my parenting, I am a little bit more, but as far as being a helper of helping people, it was definitely modeled for me by my parents. They were always, my mom especially, always the first to take a meal to someone in need, or she was really good about visiting family members who couldn't get out and about. We would go visit my great aunt. We would go visit my great grandparents, you know, take them things, take them shopping. And so I spent a lot of time just following her around doing those sort of like friend and family outreach things. And I see myself doing a lot of the same stuff with the folks that we work with who I'm not related to or don't attend church with. But definitely it was modeled for me, and my dad similarly, They're very social people who enjoy their friends and helping one another and building community. And so yeah, definitely they modeled that for me.
We've talked about this before about, you know, religion and church and how there are people who give it a bad name, right? And they don't practice love and they don't practice acceptance, or they sort of, you know, they're hypocritical and whatnot. So I can go on and on. I guess, tell me, and we've had these conversations, kind of your viewpoint on that, you know, on, okay, it's possible to carve out, we can be, you know, people who go to church, we can make friends with people who are different races, religions, backgrounds. And then also we've talked about someone getting something like, hey, if you come and take this soup, then we'll bring you into the church and you'll find Jesus and then you'll be part of our church, you know, that sort of thing. So
yeah.
I guess that's a really long question, but talk to me about your thoughts on those.
So I think transactional love or transactional help is utter bullshit. I think it is not helpful for anybody. I grew up in a really conservative Christian culture, and attended a private Christian high school. And I learned a lot. There were a lot of good things that came out of that, but I've had to unlearn even more. And now that I'm in my 40s, I look back and there have been times I felt really, really discouraged, really ashamed of how I used to be. But as my brother-in-law pointed out to me, and I was just seeing some memes this week about it, and I was like, you know, if you look back at yourself 10 years ago and you haven't changed, how sad is that? Like, we should always be growing and changing and learning and asking questions.
What do you mean by that? Like how I used to be?
Like thinking I had it all figured out because everything was, I was taught that everything was figured out. Here's the way it is. This is just the information you need to absorb. And as I got older, I would come across things and be like, well, what about this? What about that? Like one example being, you know, the health and wealth culture in the church, or like the, if you have enough faith, this will all work out for you. But time and again, things in my life just went down the toilet. And I was like, okay, well, I thought I was faithful. I thought I was doing all of the prescriptive things. Like, what did I miss? Somehow I'm failing because this happened. And then I realized, actually that's just part of life. Like being a human, crappy things happen sometimes and you got to roll with it, right? It doesn't mean you're a bad person or like you didn't say the right prayer. So I would say that the last several years I've been on a deconstructing my faith journey. And I'm slowly building up a few of my construction process is slow, right? Like that's where I'm at. I'm very tentative about it now, but one of the examples is that I was thinking of a mom in say some third world country where she's watching her child die because she literally can't do anything to save them for whatever reason, food, medical care, you know, whatever. You can't tell me that that mom is not praying with more faith than anything I've ever experienced in my life. Mm. You can't. And I don't think that we can make that a religious opinion or a religious prescription. And that translates directly to the work that we do with Love One, because people can come just as they are. I could care less, like they need something and we have what they need. We can help them. There's no transaction.
Well, there's often, you know, we're all God's children except for you.
Right. Yeah. The exclusivity, it drives me crazy. I'm like, well, okay. Now you've received our services. Like you were saying, like, come to Bible study and then we'll have a meal afterward. No. What if we just have the meal? Like, that's it. Then what? I have more meaningful relationships with the folks that we serve because I just am genuinely happy to see them than any of the people that I ever really spent significant time with around church organizations. In fact, I couldn't wait to get out of that culture. And I'm still working through what that feels like for myself, but my husband and I... Yeah.
even the question of like what seems Christ-like, it would be giving the person food. It wouldn't be.
Oh yeah.
It wouldn't be sitting them in a room and saying like, you have to sit here for 3 hours while we have a service.
Right.
And then you may eat at the end.
Right. Woman at the well, right? Like all of the stories that are the Bible in the Bible, and Jesus flipping the tables. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think of so many different examples, but Jesus being one of them with the social justice part, like if he was here today, oh, and guess what? He's not white. Right. Like the stereotypes and the, how do we make this palatable? Well, you know what?
The blonde hair, blue eyebrow pictures.
Yes, it's not. Life is not palatable. Like the Bible, it was translated. It was oral tradition for how long? So it's a long ass game of telephone and then written by man, right? Like they selectively wrote what they wanted into a book. Like, so I'm at this point where I'm like, why wouldn't I question some of that? Why is it more based on what other people tell me versus what my experience is? And my experience is this boots on the ground work with the very people that I know Jesus would be out spending time with. And I have a friend who's a pastor of it's a Lutheran community in Milwaukee. And I have been attending some of their online Sunday worship services. And it's like nothing I've ever experienced. And it's just a welcoming place where people can just can feel safe and are not pushed into anything. And it's just genuinely, I can't even describe it to you, Michael. It's just different than anything I've ever, it's not the like, you come and you sing the song and you greet your neighbor and you have to repeat all the words and you have to do the thing. And
you're involved with faith-based organizations. You have people in your life, some faith-based, some not, you know, some probably more religious. I presume your family, a lot of them are still religious or more so than you. How do you sort of place yourself in this? You're in the nonprofit world doing, you know, on the ground social services. How does that sort of viewpoint of deconstructing your faith and then constructing it slowly again, how does that affect what you do day to day and how you respond to people?
I think the short answer is that I'm working on figuring it out every day. I don't have an answer. I don't have it. I don't have it fixed yet. And I don't think I ever will. And I don't know that I want to. So I'm learning every day from the people I'm working with in outreach, from the people that we're serving. For me, it's showing up and asking the questions and really embracing the, I don't know it all. And there's a lot for me to learn. There's a bit of a rub, you know, with friends and family from where I grew up. I was accused of being a socialist on social media at one point. And I was like, you know, there's worse things to accuse me of. But I was like, seriously, we could just have a conversation about this.
We'll have to get coffee sometime and then you'll be a latte liberal.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Funny story, but true. My husband and I are registered voters, of different parties. But we actually share a lot of the same views, but it's funny how we've just grown and changed over the last 20 years. But especially doing this work, because you do have to be, you have to have your eyes wide open. And judgment really does not serve anyone in this work.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if someone is hungry or needs a shower, you don't say, you know, we're only giving showers to Republicans today, or Democrats today. You give someone a shower. Right. Shower.
Yep. So that's our very definition of what we do. Are you a neighbor in need?
Yeah.
It could be any one of us at any time.
Which what you're doing, I think that's the problem with America right now. I mean, there's a lot of problems with America, but idea of like the infrastructure bill, like a bridge collapsing doesn't know if the child on the bridge is a Republican or Democrat child, you know, lead in drinking water, school shooting, having safety at schools. Like those are all, human safety, health necessities. So we've politicized health and safety, which is scary, right? Which is really scary. And so from a social service perspective, sure, there's going to be there are arguments about funding or how to use money or what services to have. But the moment that you label someone as not needing because they're that thing, or I've sort of been shocked by being against everything to be against it, you know, from a political standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these folks, you know, I'm purposefully not being too specific. I mean, some of them, they'll tell you that they're true Christians. They care about society. They care about the world. And then they're against X, Y, and Z because their political party doesn't want them to be for it. When that thing is a health and safety thing for the health and safety of the children of America and isn't actually, you know, in my mind, a political thing, it's something for all children.
Right.
It's a scary time. It's a fascinating time.
It is.
So talking about health and safety, you know, I know that when you do the laundry stuff, there's sometimes people who have needles in clothing, mm-hmm. have COVID precautions. Mm-hmm. I presume someone might have a lighter or, you know, a knife or something like that. How do you
machete?
Oh my God. How do you make sure that your volunteers are safe and healthy, and this process occurs in a way that, you know, someone doesn't help with laundry and get poked by a phone?
In a way that doesn't keep you up at night worrying about how I'm running events.
Right.
Yeah, we're trying not to give our attorney a heart attack. So with COVID, we switched to holding events outside for quite a while. And that looked like giving out to-go kits of laundry supplies. So dryer sheets, quarters, detergent. And then we did prepackaged hygiene kits as well. You know, and then we learned a lot more collectively as a society and, you know, as scientists did more research about COVID and really what the risks are or were, or, you know, it's an evolving thing, but we did resume laundry in the laundromat. We do have a policy that volunteers do not handle the laundry themselves. So folks who bring laundry load that laundry into the washer themselves. What our volunteers do are make sure that the soap and the dryer sheets are available, the softener, you know, whatever products folks need, they can help with that. And then they put the quarters in the machines, or they swipe the cards or use the app, you know, whatever the format of the laundromat is. And we pay for all of that. And then the individuals will move their wash to the dryer, you know, and make sure that that's as dry as they want it or whatever. And then they get to spend time in there folding their laundry. We do make sure that the laundromat is not over capacity. And so we are maintaining social distancing inside. Everybody's required to wear a mask. We also implemented hand washing at all of our events. And so folks need to go through the hand washing line, which actually, like, even if we ever get out of COVID, we are going to keep, because people were so appreciative. Like, people will come just to wash their hands. We always have warm water. We fill up the big water jugs, like camping jugs, and we have soap, and we buy nice smelling soap that people like, not just like industrial strength. So it's actually a really pleasant experience. And then we always make sure that whichever volunteer is running hand washing is outgoing, engaging, welcoming. Like, that's a very intentional decision on our part as far as who we put at hand washing, because that's a lot of people's first impression. The hand washing is actually set up in the parking lot next door, depending on the laundromat, or outside. And that's where everybody lines up. And then people have a choice whether they want to haul their laundry to the laundromat and do it that night, or if they want to grab a to-go kit. You know, some folks have been trespassed from certain laundromats, and so they don't have the option of going inside. And so they take their laundry elsewhere. Sometimes it's just too cumbersome to try to haul all their belongings on the bus or a bike. bike or in a cart from wherever they're camping. So that's always an option that we provide. And then we do hygiene supplies. People can shop for what they want. What we found with the temporary use of the prepackaged hygiene kits is that there's so much stuff that goes to waste. Not everybody needs one of everything, nor do they want that. And, you know, that's another approach that we feel strongly about, is that people can determine for themselves what they need or what they want and how many. And so we have volunteers who help folks shop for that stuff. So not everybody's rummaging through, you know, touching everything, but you're not obligated to take anything or, you know, whatever. And then we have a hot meal. We have volunteers who serve a hot meal. And then we have on-site partners who provide testing and vaccinations and, you know, family supports and housing intake and needle exchange. So, you know, we've just pivoting to offer all of that outdoors. It's a challenge in Oregon weather because, you know, as we were talking about before we started, it's been so dark. It's dark, it's rainy, it's cold. But we've been really fortunate to be able to expand our supplies to have canopies and lighting. And I'm really excited. I just ordered some rain gutters for our canopies so we won't all drown. And we have just pivoted to being an outdoor organization, which for a lot of our folks is actually far more comfortable than cramming everyone indoors where it's claustrophobic and, you know, congregate setting where past traumas have often happened. The shower cart runs about the same way outside with everything offered outdoors. And then the stalls, of course, in the shower trailer. You know, I think COVID has taught us to be flexible. And actually I think has really helped us refine our processes.
You had to use the word pivot, Brandy.
Was I not supposed to say pivot? I feel like that's my word.
No, you can say pivot. Everybody said pivot for the last 2 years.
I know.
So I really like what you said about the equitable process of picking hygiene things that you need versus just getting something. And I've thought a lot about that lately. For example, I read this article about the government that's going to give out 4 COVID tests per household. Mm-hmm. Question of like, what if one person needs 9? What if someone needs 0, 1, 3? What if someone needs 6? So we do that a lot. You know, we do that with maybe we give out blankets. We think everybody needs a blanket. What
right.
if someone just got blankets? They don't need one, but the next person, they need 3, right? So,
yep.
And the houseless population is not monolithic, right? Like, in their mental health needs, their physical health needs, what they desire to eat, what they want for hygiene, how they identify, you know, on and on and on. And so I think those are really interesting things of maybe this is like where social services are going and figuring out like, how do we help people, treating them who they are, knowing that, yes, you're still getting help, but I'm not just giving you a random box of things that you may not need.
Right.
We're going to try right. to do something that works for you based on what you need. So is that, would you say that's kind of one of the goals for you organizationally moving forward, is kind of figuring that out? Like, how do we get people not just help, but help in a way that they need it?
Absolutely. There is no one size fits all solution to our houseless crisis, to, I would argue, pretty much any of the things that as a society we're going through, because it comes down to individuality and self-determination. And I can't impose my opinions or my thoughts about what would work well for, I mean, I'm just thinking of, say, like, I could pick and name 5 folks that we serve on a regular basis. None of them has the same need. And I cannot treat them as though they do. It doesn't help them. It doesn't help me. My resources won't be used wisely and they won't have their needs met, you know? So none of us, it's kind of like some of those examples of the equity versus equality, you know, the visuals that go around. It's very much like that. You know, I can have, so one of the things we do with folks is we encourage them, ask if you need something that you don't see, ask. We might not be able to do it, but we will try. And if we can do it, we will absolutely help. And our motto is, if we can help, we should, right? So if someone comes and asks for something and it's a strange request, but maybe that So I'll tell you a quick short story about this. I had a guy come up to me, and he had been over in the laundromat, and Tom, our coordinator over there, was he called over and said, "Hey, so-and-so's like pretty, you know, worked up about this. He's going to come talk to you." I said, "Okay." So he comes over and he gets right up in my face, and he is belligerent about how he needs a phone. And something that I do is I work with folks to identify if a phone is in need and whether they are in a place where they feel like they can maintain having a phone. And then we re-up their minutes every month. And it has exponentially helped folks' ability to stay connected to housing, to other resources and supports, whatever programs they're part of, you know, if they're working with a case manager, because it's hella hard to find somebody who doesn't have a phone and they're camping outside and they're constantly getting moved, right?
Like,
right. For any of those things, or they want to stay in touch with their kids or their family, any of those things. And so that's something that we do kind of as a pretty directed effort as we work with folks. So he got in my face about this, and I'd had a few interactions with him, but none substantial. I didn't know him very well. And I said, I don't have any phones tonight. You know, I can put you on the list, but I don't have any. And he just started telling me that how is he supposed to get a job if I didn't have a phone for him? And how is he supposed to do all these things? You know, and in my other life, also, I'm a trained mediator, and I used to mediate for Clackamas County. And I love mediation work. And I had to put on my mediator's hat and get to what are the underlying issues for this guy? Because, you know, I know it's not my responsibility, and he knows it's not, but like, there's a felt need here, and he's not feeling supported. Mm-hmm. And so we started talking about that, and I just said, you know what, give me a minute. And I walked over to some of our other folks who I know even better. And I said, "Hey, you know, Bill and Ryan, do you know this individual?" And they're like, "Yeah." They told me a little bit about it. And I was like, "Well, I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions. He just got in my face about a phone, and you know, y'all know that's not how we run things here. So what do you suggest?" Cause I didn't know. I was at a loss. I didn't want him to feel like he was leaving, not getting served, but his expectations were not aligned with ours. And next thing I know, Bill and Ryan are like, "We got this." And so they walk over to him and they talk to him, and about 30 seconds, a minute later, he walks over and is just totally chill. And he's like, "I'm really sorry. I never should have talked to you like that. I'm really sorry. I'm just really frustrated. I need a phone. I need to make some calls." And I was like, or he goes, "And I need to get to some appointments." And I was like, "Well, I want to work with you. I don't have a phone tonight, but it sounds like transportation's an issue." And he's like, yeah. And I was like, "Dude, I got bus passes. I got bus passes for days. Is that going to help you?" And he's like, "Yes, that's what I need." You know, but it's taking the time to get to know people. But again, it's also bringing in the community to try to address those specific needs. So back to what you were saying, one size doesn't fit all. And it's a different approach to social services and involving people in the process that have the experience, that have the insight, that have gone through those things. People have traumas around all sorts of things, or experiences, or ideas that are things that I wouldn't know unless I took the time to get to know them and ask.
Yeah, I think that's really important, asking people what they need, or letting people tell you what they need. I mean, we do that. We try to prescribe with everything. We do that with racial justice. We do that with people who are homeless. We say, you know, for example, we say, like, this is what they would want or what we should do for them. But instead, it should be, okay, you are invited in, you're at the table, your voice is heard. What do you need? You tell us what you need.
Yes.
I think that's a different approach that I'm hoping people start taking, that you only get to the heart of that when you actually ask the person what they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they will tell you when they have a relationship with you.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you was your goals. I know it's a new year, it's 2022. I can't believe it. It seems like it was 2019 and then 2022. What are your goals for either you personally or organizationally or both for this next year?
Personally, it's to practice a little more self-care. But I feel like naturally, maybe it's all the hard work of the last couple of years that I'm now in a spot where I feel like I'm getting there to be able to take some time off, to have a normal work week, which And I don't mean 9 to 5 by normal. I mean, like, I often put in hours 7 days a week, but spreading them out, because, you know, outreach and human services, that's not a 9 to 5 job. People need our help outside of those hours. So if I can be available and flexible, you know, I can do the things with my kids during the day or at certain times. And I just plan my schedule around that. So I feel like that's a whole new season. And my goal would be just to continue to enjoy that and make all of those things a priority, my family, my work, you know, building community. For Love One, I think so we bought a van. We have our shower cart. Next step is a trailer. We need a good size trailer to haul food. We started a food pantry out in Redland, and we're serving 200, 300 people every Thursday, with fresh fruits and produce and protein and box goods. And, you know, just they don't have access to that out there. And so a trailer's on the horizon, but dreaming bigger, I think a physical location, not necessarily to provide services at, because the value of what we do is in building relationship in the communities we go into and taking services to people, but a place where we can park all of our stuff, where we can keep our storage, where we can meet as a team, you know, that sort of thing. So I think physical location is next up, as well as we're applying for funding through that Metro Supportive Housing Services measure. And so really funding is up there as well, because it's well past time that we had funding to increase our staffing, our outreach capacity. You know, we've been really fortunate to have quite a bit of funding to provide the services through volunteers. And as you know, we've been able to start paying our coordinators, but I'd like to put all of that on steroids this year.
Great expression. let me ask you.
Okay, supplements. I would like to give them all supplements.
Let me ask you the 5 questions we ask every guest. The first one is, what's a quote or mantra that you live by?
If you can help, you should. If I can help, I should. If I can help, I should.
That's a good one. And what's your favorite childhood memory?
I don't remember what I said last time. My favorite childhood memory, probably the year that I got a horse for Christmas.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was a good one. That's this exciting. Year, wait, do you want to know what I got this year for my parents?
A horse?
a stun gun and a bathrobe.
A stun gun? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. When you said that, I thought you meant like a stud gun, like a bedazzler, like a craft item.
No, that would, it's about as applicable. Yeah.
Well, you would like a bedazzler as well.
Yes. That's on my list for next year.
What's a failure or mistake you made that actually turned out for the best?
I mean, a lot of them. Well, maybe not all for the best. Can I come back to that one?
Sure, yeah. What issue or issues keep you up at night?
Oh, being afraid that I missed responding to someone's text or call or email in a timely manner, because so many of the people I'm working with, it's like, I've got an eviction notice and I need to pay my rent, or my car got towed and I need it, you know, their immediate needs. And I'm just afraid of dropping the ball where it's going to further impact them.
Who's your favorite pop star or band or both?
Okay, so lately I have been really into these Nelly collabs with country artists. Okay. So like Lil Bit and Good Times Roll and a couple other songs. Like that's the top of my playlist right now. I listen to those songs on repeat all weekend.
You want to come back to that other issue, is what's your favorite failure, or not your favorite, your failure or mistake that actually turned out to be for the best?
I really wish I could remember what I said before. Sorry, Michael, I feel like I'm letting you down. I can't think of, I mean, it's not that I don't have them.
You're not letting me down. You're not letting anybody down. So I think what you said is true and is a good answer. You said that there's been plenty or there's been a lot.
I guess I just don't, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about failures. I spend more time thinking about how the outcome worked out. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. I don't know. I feel like I before had tied so much shame. I'd assigned so much shame to failure because I always felt like I had to do everything perfectly to avoid consequences, you know, like that whole conservative Christian upbringing, that now I like steer so far away from that of like, no, I'm not going to feel bad about that. We're just going to try again.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good. That's your answer, that your failures or mistakes, they're all learning lessons for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every time.
Who do you want to give a shout out to in the community that's doing a good job, like person, organization?
Yeah. So I want to give a shout out to Stephanie Hollingshead at Milwaukee Lutheran Church. She's a single mom who just kicks ass all the time. She works two full-time jobs, and she comes to our events. She hauls a clothing trailer. So she used to set up a clothing closet at our events. Well, it started out as tote buckets, right? And she would help people find clothing that would fit them. And then she upgraded to rolling racks because COVID shut down the church. And so she took all of the choir robe, the racks, and started hanging all the clothes on them. And then she graduated to a trailer. I don't know if you saw it on the news, but it got stolen a while back. It was fully loaded for one of our events and somebody stole it and they ended up graffitiing all inside of it, trashing it. But the Portland police found it and it's since been restored, but she hauls this trailer. Everything is sorted by size. She knows people's size, color preference, texture preference, shoe size. And she makes sure that folks who come to our events leave with weather appropriate clothing that they actually want to wear. Which has been such a game changer for people when they're literally walking around in socks or, you know, ill-fitting clothing. And they can leave just feeling, I know they can make eye contact when they leave, and that's huge.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's amazing how, you know, a shower, a new outfit, being fed, I mean, any one of them, but all together, you just feel like a different person.
Yeah.
How can people get involved or businesses get involved?
Well, we always love volunteers and we always love donations. So online, our website, is, loveonecommunity.org, and there's options for volunteering, learning more about what we do. We always post recaps of our events. So we talk about what the event was like, you know, how many people came, just to help. And we have photos. Because, you know, talking about this, it's like, I would wonder, what does that look like if I were to show up? I'd be like, that sounds overwhelming. So we try to make it easy to digest for people who are interested. Online donations, mailed donations, those are always super helpful. We also have an Amazon wish list that we update regularly with what we need as far as supplies. So we're serving well over, not including the food pantry, we're serving well over 500 people every month with showers and laundry and hygiene supplies, which is quite a lot of stuff that goes out the door. So it's a challenge to keep everything stocked, especially during the winter, you know, dry socks, hand warmers, that sort of thing. So that sort of support is always really helpful to us. But even just if somebody wants to learn more and wants to reach out to me, I'm happy to talk more about it because the education piece of it, of like what we do, why we do it, you know, kind of what we talked through tonight, and why it matters, why this approach is working. Those are all things that if I had a magic wand, everybody would understand that to some degree. And I think we'd be a lot farther down the road, addressing some of these issues.
Well, you are a great woman. I enjoy having you as a friend, having you as a client, and I think our community is blessed to have you as well. So, you know, thanks for not only doing the podcast, thanks for all the work that you do every day.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And I absolutely love the work, and I can't say enough about the amazing people who do this work with me. It's a joy to go to work every day and do this. So, and you help make sure that we can do it. So thank you for that.
I guess I did. Yeah. Keep up all the good work. You give me, when we're at a time where we lose faith with people and I'm trying to talk carefully and their, you know, level of intelligence or their level of caring, you remind me that there are people still in this world that get up every day and care and do the work and look at people as they are, treat them with love, give them the services that they need, and then keep doing it the next day. We keep going. So thank you so much for doing that.
Absolutely. Just really quick, we three of the folks that we've worked with for years now join our board meetings and contribute at that level.
That's wonderful.
It's a visible investment into humans that deserve much more than they get. But it's so exciting for me to show up at a board meeting and see my people, you know, like we're literally all doing the work together, and that's what matters.
Well, thank you so much, Brandy. Have a good rest of your night.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We want to thank Brandy Johnson for being on this episode of the podcast, and a reminder to visit loveonecommunity.org. Be sure not to miss any of our upcoming guests by subscribing to the podcast on your favorite streaming service. You can also visit alloftyourbusinesspodcast.com for previous episodes, custom gear, and if you happen to know anybody that you think would be a great fit for the podcast, click our contact page and let us know.